Hello, and welcome back to Green Living Podcast. This week's guest is Elaine Butler. Elaine runs the website Living Lightly in Ireland, a sustainable living guide with all of the information needed to live a greener life, from where to shop to what to cook. In order to maintain objectivity, she doesn't do sponsored posts, and the website is funded by readers. She has just finished studying for a master's in product design for the circular economy, which was funded by the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. In this episode, we chat about assumptions, perfectionism, showing compassion, and mental health in the sustainable and low-waste community. Let's get into our conversation. Hello, Elaine, and welcome to Green Living Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Claire.
Of course. So you are the creator and writer of the blog Living Lightly in Ireland. You also have a Facebook page and an Instagram account. You post a lot of helpful information on all of your platforms, and you do it really regularly, which is amazing. Can you please tell me more about how your blog got started, your sustainable lifestyle, how that all came to be?
Well, I had always sort of been interested in the natural world, and I did think that I was living sustainably, but actually when I started to look at it, I really wasn't. And I got involved in politics when my youngest was two. Of course, I wanted to change the world, and I wrote policy for an environmental political party. And I was doing that for 5 years. And at the end of 5 years, I discovered that I wasn't aware that coffee cups weren't recyclable or compostable. And I just couldn't really believe that that had escaped me. And what else did I not know? And I thought I was really well informed. So I had stopped writing policy for the political party, and I wanted something to keep my grey cells going. So I decided to, I was researching about sustainability, and I started to put the answers I was finding in the form of a blog, because one, it was easier for me to find the information again, and two, it was handy to tell other people, because when I'm chatting to people and they might say, oh, where did you get that? And so instead of telling everyone individually 1,000 times, I could just point them towards the blog. So that's how it started. And I thought I might run out of stuff to say after a year, but 4 years on, there's still stuff to say. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm hoping in the future that sustainability becomes so mainstream that there won't be a need for a website like mine.
Have you noticed in the 4 years that you've been writing your blog that it has become a little more mainstream or more popular?
Well, it definitely has as a topic. I do think that for anyone who starts writing a blog or a podcast or anything like that, there is a time that it takes to get traction. And if that person starts a second or a third website or a podcast or whatever, it's much easier to get followers because the algorithms know who you are. So there's that as well. But I do think sustainability has become more of an issue for people. I'm not sure that people are really keen to read about it as a pastime. You know, it's not, I think they're almost a bit afraid of what they might read, because then they'll feel guilty about having their weekend breaks, or they'll feel guilty about their Domino's takeaway or whatever. And they don't want to know some information. But some of my articles are compendiums of, well, eco brands is a shorthand, you know, I mean, how you define that's another thing, but like eco brands for clothing and other items, and they're really, really popular. So what I'm finding is people aren't necessarily changing the way they're living. Some people are, but most people are looking to switch out certain things. So they're still shopping, they're still traveling, but they want to maybe to make that less damaging and support brands that are less damaging. So that's definitely, and there has been a huge increase in the numbers of people coming to my website over the last 4 years.
So they are looking to swap something instead of maybe completely eliminating an item from their life.
Yeah, and I do try, when I'm introducing a list of suppliers or brands, I'll always preface it with saying, you know, what you have already is much more sustainable than buying something new. And please aim to buy secondhand or borrow before buying new. You're not sure how many people are reading that introduction and just going straight to the list of brands, but you can only try. And I do find actually in the social media, that's where you get a chance to really influence people's approach, because it's like snippets of information. And if you do it over and over again, so for instance, I would post up photographs of secondhand items that I might have bought or things that I've repurposed that prevented me from having to buy something. And I think that's much more digestible and much more acceptable to people, especially when you're showing what you've done, and that it's not all sacrifice, you know, it's a different way of living and there's benefits to it. So I almost, the website is where people go with set ideas about what they want, but social media, I think, is where you can really shift people's attitudes and long-term choices.
You said something about when they go to a blog or website, they're maybe don't want to find some information about something because it might be sad or scary. And I think that's very interesting, because I think people that, you know, read the blogs and everything, you know, that's real research. And I think the Instagram as well, because it's visual and they're seeing you being able to upcycle something and it's achievable. So yeah, that kind of dichotomy of the between the blog and the Instagram, when you might be saying basically the same thing, but in a different form, and how it someone interprets it.
Well, I think the website is there for people who want to know all of the details about something. So why maybe is dairy farming so damaging? And then there's other people who aren't ready to give up dairy. Now, we still eat dairy in our house, so I'm not suggesting that, you know, we're perfect. I'd love to eat less. It's a goal every year. It's the same goal. But some people don't want to know why it's damaging, or they're not in a position to give up dairy. Maybe they have young kids and they're, you know, or they have a family member that's obsessed with dairy, or they live in a dairy farm. God knows what it is, you know, but they're aware of that, but they don't know the details. And then other people who really want to give up dairy and they want to know the information behind why they should, to motivate them to do it. So it's lots of different reasons. And I do find, I subscribe to a lot of websites, you know, newsletters and stuff like that. And I'm surprised at how few people do. So the number of people who visit my website far exceeds, like by hundreds of thousands, the number of people who subscribe to my newsletter, which I think is really interesting. So the people who will get it on a weekly basis and read the information is a tiny, tiny, tiny amount. And they're the sort of the eco geeks, is what I call them, you know, like myself, want to know, they're on their journey, they want to do better. Whereas most people just want to get on with their lives. They want to do as little damage as possible, but they don't have the bandwidth to take on all the information. They just want somebody to tell them, buy this, do this. Although they don't want to be told, don't do this. That's something that's not really attractive. People don't like being told what they can't do.
That's very interesting, the difference between your visitors at your website and then the newsletter list. Oh, that's very interesting.
And I think the website is really for me as well, because I crystallize my thoughts when I write an article. So, and it can take a long time. You sit down with this information and you're putting it together and you're linking it together. And then when you're doing that, you go, well, that's really interesting. You know, maybe if we did this, or maybe if we looked at it this way, then, you know, and so it's really good for me. So the website is for me as much as it is for everyone else. So even though I know some of the articles, I mean, I could just have a website with a list of eco brands on it, to be honest, because that's where the most traffic comes from. But I wouldn't enjoy having a website like that, because I enjoy writing articles where we look at maybe the difference between sustainability in terms of a consumerist lifestyle or lifestyle choice, or a conscious way of living, and like what's the subtle difference between those two. They're the sort of articles I enjoy writing, and they're the ones the eco geeks like reading. So the others, the list of brands is for everyone else, but my eco geeks, we're yeah, that's what we love to write and read.
Well, and as you're saying this, I'm even thinking about when I research for podcasts, that's what I, you know, for me personally, when I'm researching and for the podcast, that's, you know, that's the real grit and information that I also think needs to be out there. I just do it. I have my website, but I do it on the podcast in a different form. And I don't remember which article this was written. And I'm sorry, I don't know if you wrote this or someone else wrote this, but it says people want change, but they don't want to change.
Yeah, I don't know if I came up with that sentence. It's one of those sentences that I'm sure somebody else somewhere has said it before. I don't credit it to anyone because it's probably something I've heard years ago and it's just in my mind rather than having read it recently and credit it to the person. But it's very true. People are very slow to change. And what they want is they want their single-use items to be biodegradable so they can still use them. They don't really want to have to remember to bring containers to refill because that's a different way of operating. And like even when I started and I was very motivated to do it, I kept forgetting them. And it was just so frustrating. And so for somebody who's not as motivated, like they really don't want to have to do it. And which is why I'm not, like there's always this row online between independent individual action and systemic change, as if there's like, they're disconnected. They're both the same. I don't understand. It's like, why are we saying not to do one and just to do the other? Why don't we do both? Because like, for instance, like the supermarkets are changing now. They're moving away from single use plastics. You know, they're not doing that just because somebody woke up, you know, the CEO of a supermarket and decided that this was a good idea someday. It's because they're seeing that this is what consumers are demanding. And also, more importantly, they're seeing their customers go elsewhere where they're able to get it. And that's threatening their business. So individual action does lead to systemic change. And yes, systemic change can affect things, more quickly when they happen, but they are very slow to come on board. And they don't come on board unless there's enough of a grassroots movement, which is what you're seeing since, you know, they call it the David Attenborough effect, where, you know, people, regular people, you know, not eco-geeks, have become interested in this. And that's what's really shifted it. So I think that we need to, I try and focus on all different aspects, you know, because different things float to different people's boats. And somebody who feels disconnected from the political world or, you know, the civil society, they personally can decide to use a reusable coffee cup and they can feel good about that. And what I've noticed happening is that most people who start with that individual action, that one item, they go on to become more involved, even if it's just signing petitions or telling their local politician what they think about the fact that Roundup or some other weed killer is used in their area. They go on to do that, but it starts with an individual action. And I think if we dismiss individual action, sometimes we're dismissing or discouraging people from taking the first step. So, and I do think, but in saying that, those people who take the first step and who do change are changing everything for the other people who find it really hard to change or don't really want to change. So, but I'd say the vast majority of people just want to get on with life the way it is and they don't really want anything to change. But life changes. You know, they will have to change because that's just the way the world is. They might not want to. So sometimes it has to be done through legislation and levies and taxes and stuff like that because, you know, carrots only work to a certain degree.
I'm really happy you mentioned about the supermarkets. I was listening to your interview on East Coast Radio and you talked about plastics in grocery stores in particular. You talked about shopping local or from local suppliers within the region because they don't use or should, you know, typically don't use plastic because that fruit or vegetable isn't traveling as far as fruit and veg that comes from international places. And I thought it was great that you brought up other items such as like soda cans or receipts that are also coated in plastic that some people might not know. And so I was hoping to get your take about, because to me, and I think you said this in the interview, that's also greenwashing about, you know, maybe something, oh, it's aluminum can, but it still has that plastic coating. So do you have any big ideas about greenwashing?
When I started the website, I probably had a much more black and white view about greenwashing. And over the last 15 months, I've been doing a master's in product design for the circular economy, which is, the circular economy is about keeping materials in use for longer. And I've realized that greenwashing is a term we use when we assume intention. And we should never assume intention, because sometimes it is a misunderstanding or a confusion or the best that a company can do at that point in time, and they're trying to reduce their impact. And I've noticed, and this is not just in the sustainability community, you know, this is across all communities and society at large, we've become very polarized in our views about other groups, we'll just call them, and anyone who is not in our group. So what you find is people who aren't managers or up high in multinationals will dismiss any action by a multinational as being greenwashing, because they think, oh, well, they can do more. And what you find is then, and then people who work for artisanal companies or, you know, small boutique companies will say, oh, support the small boutiques because, you know, they're more authentic and they have more ethics, a better ethics, which is, you know, can generally be the case. But it's like people support the people who are like them, and they assume the people who are not like them have very, have dire intentions, you know, and it's all selfishness and it's all profit and stuff like that. And look, sometimes it is. I'm not saying it's not, but there's loads of boutique businesses that are not ethical. And there's loads of multinationals who are trying their best and they can do more, absolutely. But it's like turning a big ship. It just, it takes time. And when you have your whole business invested in doing things a certain way, if you change that, you risk... And I know people say losing profit and it's all down to profit, but those profits can often pay for salaries and company. And there's lots of big companies that have gone bust in recent years, you know, that people didn't think that they would go bust. And so profit is needed to make sure that the businesses are economically viable. So sometimes there are companies that I know could do more and they're not doing it. But I know that because I know the individual making the decision. So I know their intention. And I am quite happy to call it out as greenwashing then. But a lot of situations, and I see it with individuals who, like for instance, one of my, it's not a pet peeve as such, because I can understand why somebody would think it would better. But you know, one of the misunderstandings I see a lot is biodegradable, dog, but you know, bags for picking up dog poop, you know. I don't have a dog, so I suppose it's me othering here. But if it's going into a black bin, which is going to be incinerated, go to landfill, then why waste your money on biodegradable plastic? You know, biodegradable plastic, I wouldn't be a big fan of, because I think there's concerns over it and there's issues with it. But in some instances, it is a good alternative when you can't use a reusable container. But so when an individual is choosing a biodegradable poop bag, they're not doing it to greenwash. It's generally a misunderstanding. And those misunderstandings exist in the business world as well as in the, you know, civil society. So we need to cut businesses a break. And there's a fear in the business community. I suppose I used to run my own business and hopefully will again. And maybe it's because I have some sympathy for people who are, you know, how difficult it is to run a business, and you know, you're just trying to keep your head above water a lot of the times. Some people are afraid to make a step wrong. They're afraid to be accused of greenwashing, and therefore they do nothing until they know the absolutely perfect decision. And so, you know, I think that these accusations of greenwashing can sometimes do more harm than good, you know. And like, what do we want from people like Unilever and Coca-Cola and that? I mean, do you want them to stop selling their product? Because that's not going to happen. you know. If you want it in, if you want to say some, only sell them in aluminium cans and not in plastic bottles, you could say, okay, fine. You know, if you had a life cycle analysis and you knew the aluminium cans were better, or use a higher percentage of aluminium cans, like, that's a realistic expectation. But sometimes I just see the criticism online and it's basically like, oh, they're all a shower of money grabbing, you know, villains. I was like, well, who is that helping? Because there's some business owner somewhere reading your comment who is terrified to switch to compostable coffee cups in case they're going to be accused of greenwashing, you know? And it also, I think it ties in with this trend towards perfectionism that we have in society nowadays, which is one of the reasons people buy new a lot of the time, is because they can't bear the idea of having something scratched and damaged. But this idea that there's a perfect way to be and a perfect decision to make, and we don't allow people to make mistakes anymore. And I think it would be much better for any progression in society if we showed compassion to each other and everyone, and give people the benefit of the doubt, like hoping that, assume the best of intentions. Now, if you find out it's otherwise, that's fine. You can be honest in your response, but don't assume that someone you don't know is just doing it to line their pockets. Yes, there are people out there who are doing that, but in my experience, they are the minority. And if we assume the best of people, we're much more likely to get where we want to go quicker. It does mean we're going to be wrong sometimes, but I'd rather get where we want to go quicker and be wrong sometimes than to be right all the time and to shut down action in people for fear of being criticized.
Greenwashing as a term can be, as you said, so scary, especially if you are a small business or someone just trying to make that move. And as you said, moving a ship, 180, it takes time and it takes effort, and there is risk of loss of clients or customers, and it can be very expensive to change as well. I think people see it as, or don't see how powerful calling a company or a small business that they're greenwashing. It puts all the responsibility on the small business or that company. You know, you don't take any responsibility for, well, did you research about them? You know, what do you really know about them?
And it's also, it's more the tone we have with people as well. It's like, if a business has made a mistake, and like, for instance, like, I'm not a big fan, like I said, of biodegradable plastic, but years ago, everyone thought that they were like the silver bullet, they were going to save us. And if you're a company who had invested in all of that only to find out, oh, this is not the direction we should have been going in, you know, that's a lot of wasted energy and resources. So I always think it's very useful to start a conversation with companies and say, oh, you're doing this, that's really good. Have you looked at this as well? And then that's activism. I know some people say they don't want to get involved in activism, but that is activism, and engaging with somebody and starting a conversation with them. If you start calling them names and start using the term greenwashing, you just shut down the communication. And social media is fabulous. I mean, I absolutely adore it. I spend a lot of time on it, but there's the dark side of it. I just cut those polarizing people out of my social feed, you know, like, and I will hide comments on my social media channels, because there's a few people who, you know, they're lovely people, but they're very anti-big business. And if I post anything that is positive, like a positive step that a big business has taken, they're in there straight away and they're just dissing the company because it's that company, or they'll diss an individual because they're linked to a certain organization or a certain mindset. And, you know, like a very all or nothing mindset. And I understand that. I know people in my personal life who are like that. So it's not, doesn't make them bad people, but it really doesn't. I don't want it on my social media channels, because I'm very keen. I limit the amount of negative stories that I put out there. And there's, you know, there can be lots, but I purposely push forward the positive actions people have made. And I want the social media channels to be a positive, rewarding, nurturing, supporting space for people to go and to feel better about the state of the world from a sustainability point of view. So, I have to be very mindful to manage that and not allow conversations to slip down that rabbit hole of, well, those people there are evil, they're bad, because let's give them the benefit of the doubt and let's be compassionate and let's start a conversation with them. And then if the conversation, we discover that, yes, their intention is not wholesome, that's fine, we'll say it, but we wouldn't know that if we shut down the conversation, you know, on day one. I think people are just more reflexive on the, you know, they just do it automatically on mm-hmm. Facebook or Instagram. It's just before you know it, there you go, you have your comment posted. I think on the website, because they tend to be long form articles, I think it's a different type of person that they might read. And also I think that there's the articles on the website, because they're longer, there's a chance to be more nuanced about things and have a conversation. Whereas I might just post something about Amazon have donated so much money to this environmental organization. And I know as soon as I post that, three or four comments going, oh my God, Amazon, they're just so bad. How can you post them? Da, 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 da. I just hide, because that's not the purpose of the post. I post positive actions by anyone. Although if somebody's done something that I think could mislead people, and not intentionally, I'm not assuming they're doing it intentionally, but let's say, okay, for instance, recycled polyester or recycled fiber garments. You know, I might go, this is brilliant. You know, somebody has come up with a new range of recycled garments, or recycled fabric is now available in these high street stores. Just remember, they are releasing microplastics every time you wash them. So if you do buy them, make sure that you wash them less and less. So I might put a caveat in like that, but outright negativity that this action by this organization is bad because they're bad, I just don't allow.
I think that's very important to have a positive space on the internet, on social media, especially for the low waste sustainability, because it can be very kind of sad and a dark place.
Yeah.
So I think having that positive place, and yes, I think moving the conversation forward, even if somebody has building blocks in their company trying to get to a goal, that's better, yeah, than just, as you said, cutting off that conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't, because I am careful about how many negative stories I post, and you know, God knows I could find one every day if I wanted to, but they're all over. I mean, that's what the newspapers thrive on, because people will click. And I've noticed that if I put up a negative story, it gets way more traction than if I put up a positive one, you know, and that's just human psychology. We're geared to focus on things that could harm us more than help us. But there's enough of that going around. So I'm not saying I'm not posting it because it's not important. I'm just trying to balance out. And actually, in the articles on the website, there's more. It's more 50-50. It's not as, I don't sugarcoat things, but you can take it when it's balanced with the positive and the negative. But on social media channels, the problem is that negative posts get more traction, so they get seen more, and that actually tips all of your feed into one way or another. So it's much more difficult to control. So that's why the articles on the website are much more balanced than the posts on my social media, where it's purposely positive, even though I will post the odd one that's negative if I think it's really relevant, or you know, it's a new departure or a new bit of information, or particularly pertinent to Ireland, you know, because you know, we've so little news sometimes going on in the sustainability sphere here. So if anybody's doing anything, it's like, oh, look, here's an article on it, you know, so.
Yeah, and you want to celebrate them and what they're doing and
bring
attention.
Also, I'm a firm believer, because, I mean, I was involved in politics for years, and I know that some people think that they're not interested in politics, but, you know, if you live in a country, you have to be interested in politics because it affects every part of your day. It doesn't mean you're into politics, the drama, because that's just nonsense. That's just egotistical politicians looking to get more sound bites. That's not politics as I describe it. But if it's something that is in Ireland, people could do something about it. So if I post a negative story about a woodland that's going to be, and actually I just did one this afternoon, a woodland that is going to be felled in order to make way for development, people could do something about that in Ireland. Whereas if I tell them about burning forests in the Amazon, yes, they can do something about it by cutting down on their meat and dairy. And I will mention that maybe in a recipe that I might post on for meat-free, you know, meat-free meals or something. And I'll say, look, this is a really good way to reduce your meat intake. Remember, meat has an impact on the Amazon and is one of the reasons why we have forests going on there. So I'm mentioning it when I give them a solution that they can do. But I'm very careful not to share endless posts about the burning of the Amazon rainforest or the fires in California or the fires in Australia, because they are horrific and they're awful. But we can't do it. We can do something about it in Ireland, and I'm very keen to tell people what they can do. But there's only so much of that that the human mind can take at a distance, you know?
Right. And if everyone is seeing, or if people in Ireland are seeing so many articles about, oh, the horrible fires and everything's bad and everything's dark, they might want to shut off from that.
That's it, exactly. I understand the argument that we have to inform people. That makes logical sense. Human beings are not logical. And actually, it ties into that whole thing about greenwashing as well. You know, there's this idea that people who are very committed to living sustainably and to having as light a footprint on the planet as possible, they don't really accept that other people don't want to do the same. They find it really hard. They think that these people just need to be educated. And once they're educated about how awful their behavior is, then they'll change. That's not how a lot of people work. It is how some people work, and that's how those people tend to be the ones who are advocating for just telling people and getting the information out there. But actually, an awful lot of people will, like you say, they'll just turn off, and it has the opposite effect. And it's the same. This is like, you know, when people make the argument, oh, businesses should just do X. They should just stop doing that. And it's like, you're assuming that everybody wants to buy the, you know, the more expensive, less toxic washing powder in a refillable container. You're assuming that. And actually, having done my master's, I realized how few people there are who are willing to change the way they buy things, you know. They don't mind buying something that is slightly greener from what they currently buy, but they don't want something that's radically different, you know, and most people don't want that. They're frightened of it. So, you know, a business is between a rock and a hard place, because when the general population don't want it, I mean, if you were to offer what the general population don't want, I mean, that's a recipe for failure. So I think people need to just be mindful that what's the end goal here? You know, what are we trying to achieve? And I know people will disagree with me, and there's plenty of websites and podcasts out there or of people who are much more interested in spreading the knowledge, the information, in a way where the more information people have about the horrors, the better. And people can find them, you know, but that's not the type of website I do. It's all focused on, let's have a fabulous life that impacts the world as little as possible. And doing that as positively as we can, both in tone and imagery, and that suits some people, it doesn't suit other people, you know. So it's different horses for different courses. But I think it's important, because I do think people do switch off, and I know I switch off, you know. I'm really into animal rights, and I don't like, nobody likes cruelty, but, you know, I would try and boycott companies that are involved in animal cruelty. But I've had to, you know, turn off feed from certain friends who will post horrific images and horrific stories. And I mean, I'm on their side, I'm agreeing with them, but I just can't tolerate that coming into my mind at 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening before I'm, you know, settling down for the evening. So, and if I'm doing that, then other people are doing that as well.
I think it's good to spread awareness, but yes, I think it's great to also have a positive place where there's action involved, because that's where there's going to be change, is once action is taken down the road.
Yeah. There's a very good piece of advice that was given to me years ago. It was about, like, how does this help me or help others? And now it was in relation to worrying and anxiety over something, but it's a good mantra for everything in life. So if I'm posting up something that's really upsetting, now maybe if the answer is that it will help me and it will help others, then it's right to post it. But if it doesn't you know, I don't believe that horrific images move people towards action. You know, I think showing people how to take action and maybe explain to them how important it is in a gentle way, I personally think is much more productive. I know people disagree, and they're the people who will post up those very upsetting images, you know, because they think it's necessary. So everybody's different, but, and I think it's finding the information source that suits the individual. You know, there's been a few podcasts that I've just stopped listening to because they sort of felt like medicine when I listened to them. You know, it's like, oh, this is really worthy. I should really know this stuff. But oh my God, I'm so depressed after it, you know. And I just went, no, that does not help me. It does not help me want to get online and share information with people to help them to live more sustainably. So it's not serving me. It may serve somebody else. That's fine. That's the podcast or the website for them. But if it's not serving me, it's not helping me, it's not helping me to help others, then really, I just don't have it in my life.
As you said, if it's distracting other, or I feel like that would also be distracting from the positive as well, if you're always thinking about the negative.
Yeah, I think nowadays, I don't think that humans were designed to live in a global world, like a connected world like this. I think we're designed to get only as much bad news as somebody can carry by horse in a day. You know, that's how our minds were evolved. And so, you know, if Johnny or Mary, you know, tragically passed away in some sort of accident, you know, you're in a community that all knew Johnny and Mary and you can all support each other. But when I hear about awful things happening to children on the far side of the world, my little human brain finds that really hard to process. And so I think you have to, in this, you know, 24-hour news cycle, and a cycle that is geared towards higher click rates and negative stories, you actively have to focus on the positive. Otherwise, your mental health will just suffer. And that's something I've really noticed. And I think as well, this year for me, because of the masters, I've gotten really busy about things in my personal life. And I've had to step back in some things, like, for instance, Christmas. My husband organized presents and stuff like that, and he pretty much did the cooking and the cleaning and pretty much everything, you know, so I'm very grateful to him. But we definitely had an increase in the waste that was generated, and we definitely would have had a bit more food waste. Now, not hugely, but I've just had to accept that I can only do me, and it's been a bit of an eye-opener about how reliant people were on me to remind them. So they might have done it, but I had to remind them. So let's say there was fruit that was going over in the fruit bowl. I had to remind my daughter, will you make sure and you eat that pear today, because it's going to be too soft tomorrow. And because I haven't been around, you know, a lot of it has ended up in the compost bin, which would never normally happen. So I think I'm going to really continue on to take a step back, because mentally it's a drain to be other people's watchdog. So that's another thing I'm going to do. So and my goal with the website has always been, and the social media, I don't try and convert people. And I really try not to preach. That's really hard to do, actually. It's very easy to fall into preaching mode. Even in my personal life, I have to stop myself. But I put information out there for the people who are interested and who want to start a journey towards sustainability. And if you don't, that's fine. Off you go. Just come back if you change your mind. But I don't get into discussions or arguments with people. And actually, on my social media channel, somebody thought that I was a member of a political party at one stage. You know, I had left them. And this person was sort of trolling my social media channels and trying to pick fights with me. And, you know, it's a stereotypical one where you might put up something about dairy farms or dairy and, you know, how carbon intensive it is. And I would be sharing a piece of research or a newspaper article. It's not just my opinion. I'd be sharing this. And they go, well, how are we supposed to feed the world? You know, and just, you're not going to get into a discussion like that on Facebook or Instagram. That's just not the place for those conversations. You know, go away. And, you know, he says to me, so what is such and such as party's policy on this? And I said, oh, I don't know. I'm not a member. And then he disappeared. And that sort of ties back into that othering that I was talking about earlier, where he thought I was other. I was a member of a political party that was other than him, and he was going to put me in my box. And interesting, he didn't want to just put me in my box. He was only interested in me if I was aligned with this political party. And as soon as I wasn't, then he had no interest in putting me in my box and just disappeared. And I was going, so I was only a target because of who you thought I was aligned with. And that just speaks to everything I was talking about earlier. It's like he assumed that my intentions were X when he thought that I was aligned with this organization. And it was so disinterested as soon as he wasn't. So I was happy to say goodbye to him. But I gave him the benefit of the doubt, because there are some people online who genuinely are asking questions and maybe don't have a bit of an aggressive tone about them, but they don't mean to. You know, so I try and give benefit of the doubt, but then if they persist and they're still aggressive and it's obvious it's not a conversation, it's a battle, yeah, I just ban them. I have no problem banning people if I need to. There's enough rows in the world. I mean, why would I engage with rows on social media? I don't know you from Adam, you know? Like, you could be a lovely person outside of social media, but I mean, sorry, I have more to be doing in my life than to be having a row. And I just don't, if somebody comes on, and I would advise this to anyone who's involved, you know, there's these all or nothing people online who want to argue whether their bamboo toothbrush is better than your bamboo toothbrush. I mean, good luck to you. If that's all you have to do in your life, good luck to you. So, you know, if somebody starts arguing, oh, well, you know, I wouldn't buy that because that's not going, okay, fine. You know, I don't respond. I actually usually put a smiley face on their comment, you know, which just drives them crackers then, because they're there sometimes looking for an argument. And actually what they're looking for is point scoring. And it's like life, people who want to score points, it's because they feel they're so far down the pecking order that they need those points. So, you know,
they need like validation for themselves.
Yeah. If that's what gets you off, you don't need me piling on to you. You need professional help, you know. So I'm going off and I'm going to have a good old life, and I'm going to leave you with your bamboo toothbrush.
I think it is so important to be able to not have to, I don't want to say waste energy, because I think there are some conversations that are good to have. And if someone is genuinely asking a question and wants to learn, that's a conversation worth having. And if it's a thread on your blog, other people can learn from that. Maybe they had the same question as the person asking the question. I think it's so great that you have a place online that is positive and is welcoming, because even as we've just been emailing and talking on this podcast, you just seem very willing to give a lot of information and to have a conversation about it, which I appreciate, you know, being able to learn more from me personally. It's people like you that make me hopeful for the future, that someone is willing to have those conversations, deal with people that might just want to have, you know, a fight, yeah. But also still be able to stay online and say, that's not going to faze me. Let's have this conversation to move forward.
Yeah, because I think if we allow social media, which is where a lot of us gather nowadays, you know, it's not around outside the church or the party or the pump, the water pump, like it used to be in olden times, the post office. So a lot of us are gathering in social media, and we can't allow people who don't know the best way to behave. That's the way I put it, because sometimes it's just misguided, or they were never taught to be polite, you know. And some people, and actually the other thing is that sometimes people are aggressive as a form of protectionism. They're sort of saying, oh, that's ridiculous, because the idea of it being true is so upsetting to them that they have to dismiss it. So the idea that animals suffer in industrial farming, and like, I still eat meat, you know, I'm hands up, I wish I didn't, but I got quite sick this year, and I not from not eating meat, but I didn't know what was the cause of it. And so I paused my journey to veganism. So I'm going to try that again. But let's say if you talk about, you know, how animals are treated in industrial farming, you know, they want to dismiss that because they do not have the wherewithal to give up meat or dairy. And so they have to dismiss it, and they have to ridicule the person saying it, because that's what they need to do in order to make themselves feel better and feel safe. You know, so sometimes it's coming from quite a I mean, there's a lot of fear actually online, and we just have to make sure, and we would see that if we met the person face to face, the people would talk to each other differently and be much more civil. And we need to make sure, we need to protect our social environment online. And I think that goes across the board, whether it's sustainability or other areas of life, we just need to do it. But with sustainability, I think it's very important to show how normal it is. That's the other thing about the website. I purposely designed it so that it can compete with other lifestyle blogs. You know, I used to be involved in interior architecture in the past. I had an interior architectural business. And so I look at those websites, you know, people who do up their homes regularly and they're basically telling you where to buy more stuff. And I mean, I moved out of the industry for a number of reasons, but it would be very hard to go back now because there's so much disposable furniture in it. And that doesn't interest me the slightest. But if you look on Instagram, the people who have an awful lot of followers, you know, if you compare people in the sustainability sphere and people in interiors world, there's so many more followers of accounts that talk about interiors, you know. And when you think about the seriousness of the two, like, and what we should, and that just goes through, like, people don't want serious late at night, you know. People want a bit of fun, they want to look at something pretty, and okay, maybe it's something as frivolous, and I do my social media channels, Instagram would be a bit more frivolous than Facebook would be, you know, because people want to look at pretty pictures on Instagram, you know. So I will put up something that homemade cookies or something like that, because it makes people feel good. But then I might mention in it, oh, I used flour that was milled locally. And did you know that most of the flour sold in Ireland comes from Canada? And then they're getting a little bit of information along with a pretty picture of cookies, you know? So, and they might make the cookies, they might think about the flour, they might, next time they see a brand of Irish flour, stretch to buy it if they can afford it. They may not, but they're aware, and it's just slowly. So I do think we have to really be careful that we don't alienate people who are interested by wagging the finger and having arguments, internal arguments. But that happens in groups. That's one thing I'll notice in every group I've been involved in, and there's been many over my life because I've tend to get involved in a lot of organizations. If you don't manage the interaction, it just dissolves into fighting. It's just the way human beings are. But if it's well managed, and if somebody is keeping an eye on the interactions and making sure that it's civil and respectful, it can be one of the most wonderful experiences.
I think there's another type of accountability when it comes to sustainability and low waste, and people that attack other people. I don't know if attack is the right word. Everyone's trying to get to the same goal. So I hope people understand that there might be an intimidating group, as you said, to maybe enter or try to get a part of, to become a part of, but everyone's happy. Everyone wants more people in the movement. And even if some people don't act properly on social media, that might just be their outpouring and their sadness for the environment, and that's how it's manifesting, is they're getting angry about, oh, I see a plastic cup in the back of your photo, why is that there?
Yeah, exactly. But it can often come from, like you're saying, a place of fear or anxiety. And you know what, if we were all in a physical room having a physical cup of coffee, we'd pick up on that and we'd be sympathetic. And the person then would also know maybe the other person's backstory, that the reason there's a plastic cup is because they just came from the hospital because their father or mother is dying and they, you know, that was all they could get. You know, we know the backstories. Online people are often making, do you know what? It's comes back to that assumption again. Assumptions. If you do not know the reason behind it, ask gently. You know, and sometimes actually don't ask. Sometimes, like, learn when to shut up, you know, when, like, what's the big picture here? And sometimes I won't give helpful advice even to somebody, like if I'm in a group, not my own social media channels, but a group moderated by somebody else. I won't give helpful advice because, like, let's say somebody has put up a post about something that I know is not the most sustainable option. If I come along and say, oh, did you know you can get this instead? Often what they're interpreting is, oh, I made a bad decision. I mean, why would I do that? So what I might do is respond and say, that's brilliant, well done. And then in a few days' time, I might post separately a link to the more sustainable option, you know, when there's enough of a time lag so they don't see it as being a response to what they've done. So I think it's very important to do that for people. Now, if it was somebody who I knew very well, they would know how to take it and I could make a comment on their post. But, you know, we're all strangers and we all have to be really nice and decent to one another, you know, and I think we'll get much further on that. And one thing I would say about the sustainable community is generally they're full of really, really nice, helpful, supportive people. And there's a few people who need to look at how they communicate and we shouldn't let them take over.
So we just need to be gentle and kind to each other because we're just all doing the best that we can do.
Yeah. And compassionate. There's not enough compassion and kindness in the world. And you catch more, what is it? You catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. So
thank you so much, Elaine, for being a guest on my podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank Elaine for being my guest this week on Green Living Podcast and for taking the time to chat with me. I really enjoyed our conversation, and her website, Living Lightly in Ireland, will be linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening.